Merry heart doeth good like medicine. Three boys were on the playground bragging about their dads. My dad scribbles a few words, calls it a poem, and they pay him $50. Oh yeah, well my dad scribbles a few words, sets it to music, calls it a song, and they give him $100. That's nothing, said the third boy. My dad scribbles a few words, calls it a sermon, and it takes six people to collect all the money. Oh, would that were true. What I want to talk to you about today on this special day on All Saints Sunday is a recurring theme on this day, and it's on whose shoulders do you stand? In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, the latter half of verse 14 and 15, Paul is described as a father to his church, to his people. In Paul's first letter to Timothy, he addresses him as my true son in the faith, according to 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 2. So Timothy and the church at Corinth, among many, many others, stood upon Paul's shoulders. But it goes much further back than that. In James chapter 2 and verse 21, we read this. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar? That's interesting to me because James, the brother of Jesus, is calling Abraham our father, which sort of makes you wonder what the argument is that many use to call no man father. But that's for another time. Just know that in the New Testament, there are people who are called father with the approval of the apostles and Jesus. The point here about this is that we didn't get to where we are in life by ourselves. We didn't get here alone. Paul, Timothy, the apostles, the whole church, in fact, the whole nation of Israel stands upon the shoulders of Abraham, to mention just one. We stand today, we stand on the shoulders of the prophets, the apostles, and all who have paved the way. I'm a product in many ways, he'd never know it, of Billy Graham. I remember listening to him on the television and watching him. And then I was one day in my high school years, my parents pretty well allowed me to go to sleep by the radio, which usually was music. But I was looking for a station one day, and I came upon Billy Graham, and I'd seen him on the TV screen, so I listened to him. And I found out that there was a program every night called The Hour of Decision, which was really half an hour program. And I wondered about that as a youth, but it was all right. Almost every night, I would listen to Billy Graham from the time I discovered him until after I moved away. I'm also the product of a man called Fred Austin, who became my pastor when I was 15 years old, when I had to either have my parents take me to youth and drop me off, or stick my thumb out to try to get to the church, or I'd walk the 2 miles to the church and someone would bring me home. But he was my pastor and he was formative in my life. In fact, I did a funeral for a friend a little over a year ago, and I was back in my hometown of Kingsport. And both my friend and I were in the youth group and were both baptized at Mountain View United Methodist Church in Kingsport, Tennessee. And Reverend Austin baptized us. He was 35 when I was 15, so even though he was an old man in my eyes, he loved us. And even though our parents did not go to church, he treated us as though we were family. And so Steve, my friend, was the one whose funeral I held. And Reverend Austin, in his 90s, heard about it and had his son drive him the 3 hours in Northern Virginia to be at the funeral. Fifty years later, after I left the church and graduated from high school and went off, I'll have to tell you, I was really nervous when he was sitting in the congregation. Some years ago, in another denomination, a program was developed called a contact chaplain. There were a lot of difficulties going on in the lives of young men and women who were in the military, and so the denomination I served at the time reached out to people who were near military bases, ministers who were near military bases, and asked if we'd be willing to become contact chaplains. What that meant is that we would have an ID describing who we were. We would be called if there was a problem, and then we'd have access to the base and go and meet with the men or women on the military base, whoever that was. And I thought that would be something that I could do. And so I volunteered, and I sent in my word, and they sent me this big, thick application back. It was really quite thick for someone that's just going to go visit somebody. But I filled it out. And one of the things that I had to complete, I had to do a spiritual autobiography that traced the whole history of my life up to the present time. And so I did. And it was a good, trip down memory lane. A few weeks later, I got a letter from the denomination, the headquarters, and said that my application had been received, but there was one problem. And it was with my spiritual autobiography. And he said, and the person who wrote the letter said, if one read your autobiography, one would get the idea that you got to where you are in life all by yourself. And we know that's not true. We want you to redo your spiritual autobiography and include the people who have assisted you along the way and who have helped make you who you are. So I sat down and did it again, and the names kept flooding back of people who would reach out and be an encouragement. One was a man named George Thompson. I was in my very first church. I was 23 years old. And although I'd had a speech class in high school and in college, doing a sermon was a whole different thing. And I hadn't had a class at that point on how to do that, and so I struggled, and I was terrible. They didn't really care because they knew I was young, and they hoped and prayed I would get better. And so I worked hard. I worked hard, and then I went back to Billy Graham's sermon books because, after all, he was the prince of preachers in my eyes. And so I began to see how his sermons were done and in fact, copied most of them, but put in my own examples from my own life instead of his. And after about 6 months, Mr. George Thompson, who was 78 years old, short man, maybe 5'1 or 5'2, a former coal miner, lost a finger in the coal mines. He himself became a Christian at the age of 40. He was illiterate, didn't know how to read, so his wife read to him from the scriptures. And he decided that he wanted to learn to read himself so he could read the Bible. And so he was an avid reader of the Bible. And I always thought he should be up in the pulpit and I should be down listening to him. And then one day after church, he's shaking my hand and he said, son, you keep it up. You're going to be a fine preacher someday. But I was encouraged because everybody else just smiled and said, good to be with you. That was the first word of encouragement I had at that little church. But it was a big deal to me. And all these years later, nearly 50 years later, I remember that encounter, that handshake, that twinkle in the eye of this man. I stand on his shoulders, as so many others do. You see, I am, and you are, the result of many, many, many people. Some relatives, some not, some friends, some church members, perhaps some pastors, someone who has influenced you and assisted you along the way. I'm the result of those people who have gone on to be with the Lord and whose legacy and whose influence stays with me and influences me now. God has used these many, many men and women to impart whatever good there may be in me, however small. The experience such as that is found all over the Bible. I mean, if you really know what to look for, you'll find it in nearly every encounter with a person in Scripture. We know about Joshua, the great warrior who led the Israelites to take the promised land. But Joshua stood on the shoulders of Moses. We read about Elisha, the great prophet, who stood on the shoulders of Elijah. Solomon, the wisest king, perhaps the richest king in the history of Israel, stood on the shoulders of his father David. And all of us stand on the shoulders of those who've gone before us. In this church, we remember on this day those who were with us from the beginning or joined us along the way. And if they stayed with us, we remember them on this day. In the 26 years of our church, we have had many memorable people who have participated, who have prayed, who have served, who have encouraged, a few who have griped, a few who have discovered flaws and pointed them out, and we were able to move along with that. There were those who created or participated in ministries. They gave their time. They gave their treasure. They gave their talent. They gave their prayers. And so we remember them. And I'm going to call some names. And because we are a cathedral, after we finish with these names, I'm going to call the names of those clergy who've gone on to be with the Lord in this diocese. If you like, will have an opportunity to call names yourself in just a moment. But for the moment, I'm going to ask you to stand, if you can. Before I read these names, I want to read to you a passage from the book of Ecclesiasticus, also called Sirach. It was written between the Old and New Testaments. And this is chapter 44, verses 1 through 15. Let us now praise famous men and our fathers and their generations. The Lord apportioned to them great glory, His majesty from the beginning. There were those who ruled in their kingdoms and were men renowned for their power, giving counsel by their understanding and proclaiming prophecies. Leaders of the peoples in their deliberation and in understanding of learning for the people, wise in their words of instructions. Those who composed musical tunes and set forth verses in writing. Rich men furnished with resources, living peaceably in their habitations. All these were honored in their generation and were the glory of their times. There are some of them who have left a name so that men can declare their praise. And there are some who have no memorial, who have perished as though they had not lived. They have become as though they had not been born, and so have their children after them. But these were men of mercy, whose righteous deeds have not been forgotten. Their prosperity will remain with their descendants and their inheritance to their children's children. Their descendants stand by the covenants, their children also for their sake. Their posterity will continue forever, and their glory will not be blotted out. Their bones will be buried in peace, and their name lives to all generations. Peoples will declare their wisdom, and the congregation proclaims their praise. And this congregation, we call these names: Tom Hennessy, Ruby Hester, Pat Kanjimi, Barbara Osborne, Maddie Mahaffey, Rosalie Christensen, Jim McMullen, Dwight Cannon, Carol Ross, Mary Ann Black, Brady Birch, Don Mustick, William Gatlin, Kenneth Turner, David Dalton, Bo Hester, Christine Shelton, Patty McMullen, Helen Dukas, Dorothy Marhefka, Dottie Bantley, Marie Safried, Steve Williams, Dean Nigels, Steve Kramer, Francis Brumbach, Theresa Handley, Blanche Faulkner, Helen Leidig, Gianna Epps, and all children who did not live to see the light of day. Sue Jantosiak, Seth Dickinson, John Faulkner, Dale Bullock, Angela McCarriger, Susie Cannon, Betty Bullock, Dale Fearon, Kent Ford, Judy Massey, Maud Faulkner, Virginia Fretwell, Ned Fretwell, Jan Gossett, Thad Jenkins, Diane Settle, Olivia McGahey, Russ Marhefka, Richard Lowry. From the diocese, the Reverend Canon Gene Foreman, the Reverend Father Ron Clemmer, the Reverend Canon Liam Anderson, the Most Reverend John Holloway, Bishop, the Venerable Bill Shelton, Archdeacon, the Reverend Canon Joe Hassel, the Reverend Canon William Bill Darwin, the Reverend Canon Paul Massey, the Reverend Canon Jim Taylor. What I would like to, if you wish to call names, what I would like to do is ask you to not give an explanation, to not give a relationship, whether it's a friend, to say nothing but the name, so that we can stand with you and honor those who have affected you. I would ask that you come forward, that you come to this podium where the microphone will be on, and so that others can clearly hear you, and so that those who are participating at home can also hear you. I ask that you limit that to 5 names this time around, and I'll start. Reverend Ed Dana. I should have also said we're going to hold on the bell until all the names are called. Sorry. Reverend Ed Dana, Father Chuck Shores, Frank Countess, Stephanie Busata, Randolph Adler.
Bessie Wiley, Esther Northrup, Ralph Northrup, and Mike Northrup.
Evelyn Jackson, Maddie Current, Milton Jackson, Milton Reed.
C.A. Johnson, Kurt Johnson, Bessie, and Raymond Williamson.
Janet Shores, John Shores, Andrew Segroy.
Hiram William Hodges, Sr., Stephen Paul Hodges, Sr. Charles Wilton, Elma Allen, Hardy Canterbury.
Tom and Edna McGee, Tom Jr. McGee, and Lassie McGee, and Tom McGee III, and Sudie and Eb Truitt, and Lawrence and Liv Packer.
James Landon, Gino Sturman.
Tom Stansberry, Chris Beam, Richard Lawrence Gardner, Senior, Junior, and the Third.
William Christensen, Debbie Christensen, Edward Anstuce, and Virginia Anstuce.
Larry Leidig.
Lester Lindstrom, Vera Lindstrom, Cecilia Larson, Wilfred Lindstrom, Richard Lindstrom, Kevin Lindstrom.
Marvin Fretwell, Harry Tucker Fretwell, George and Geraldine Metzger, George Metzger, and Virginia Garrett.
Periodically, people will tell me that this is either the best or the worst service of the year, depending on where they are, because so many tears are shed. Tears are a sign of love, though, and a sign of loss. I saw something for sale a few, months ago now, and it said, if love would have saved you, you would have lived forever. We are blessed by the people whose names were called. May we continue to remember them. May we continue to honor their legacy.